What's up, everyone? Welcome to the 400th episode of the Pokemon Podcast. It's super effective. I'm your host, SBJ. Hello. Greg here.
Hello. Looks like we made it to 400th episode.
Will also here.
Unfortunately, I cannot be so joyful and sing-songy 300 some odd episodes into doing this. I'm spent. You guys got the best years of my life. Now, this is it.
All downhill from there.
It's been downhill for a while, but we're really getting towards the bottom.
But we're here to pick you back up and make you seem better than you are.
That's true.
It's like when I went to see... What is it? MAME? Is that, that's the musical, right?
Yeah, with, that's the musical version.
What's her name? Oh, why can't I think of her name now?
Alicia Keys.
No.
Carol Channing.
And it was like, you may as well have had a marionette propping.
Yeah, she was getting real rough towards the end there.
Oh, and I saw her towards the end.
Yeah.
What a Broadway gem.
Absolutely.
To celebrate 400 episodes, this will not be a news-focused show. We have questions. It's pretty much going to be like a question-only show, like an email show, except not emails. They're
one of these times you're going to give me an extreme speed.
Oh yeah, maybe one. Not that. Well, look, don't set it up to like it's going to be later in the episode because it's not happening.
It's not. It's not happening. It's never happening.
Here's a clue for you, Greg. I've been on. At least 300 of these programs, I've never had an extreme speed myself.
What?
So, oh my gosh. Here you go.
I know the worst host ever.
That classic nugget from the pre-100 episodes just gone and retired. And I vote Igglybuff.
I don't remember what the controversy around that segment
Pichu
was.
Pichu versus Igglybuff.
Was it Cleffa? I thought it was Cleffa.
Oh, Cleffa. Okay. Then I vote Cleffa.
Cleffa, oh, okay. Absolutely. Cleffa all the way. Cleffa.
We're going to do questions pretty much the entire show, and that's pretty much it. Quick updates here. I still have Skittlejaw.
How? Did you eat more?
No, I didn't
What is wrong with you?
I didn't eat any more Skittles, Greg, but my jaw still really hurts.
Have you
Did
been
you
eating
break
other
it?
Skittle-like?
I don't think so, because throughout things? The day, it doesn't hurt as much, and then I go to bed, and then I wake up, and then it's bad again.
Oh, dude,
are you grinding
your teeth?
No, Jinx. If I was grinding my teeth, it wouldn't be one specific side.
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
No, I'm not grinding my teeth. I can tell you exactly when the pain started. It was when I bit into the Skittles.
Okay, here's the
thing.
Did you
crack a tooth?
No. Here's what it is. He sprained his jaw.
I think I just sprained.
Your jaw has muscles. And then every night as he grinds his teeth, he's re-aggravating the sprain.
My teeth.
He's so grinding his teeth.
Do two things. Get yourself Invisalign, because that'll keep you from grinding your teeth.
Are you trying to get discounts on your Invisalign
I'm
by
not getting
advertising
discounts. I'm an influencer.
I mean, you're influencing not to get Invisalign,
oh,
that's
my
for
word.
Sure.
Well, you're following me on my journey. Number two, take some ibuprofen before you go to bed.
I was taking Advil. Is that not the same thing?
Yes.
It is ibuprofen. It is. How many Advils are you taking before you go to bed?
Two. The Advil
Double
PM.
It. Double
take
it.
Three.
You got to take four.
Before we get to the questions, I did play some Mystery Dungeon. And I saw that. Figured we'd bring it up. Otherwise, our four Mystery Dungeon people who listen to the stream are going to have a heart attack that we haven't talked about it.
There are quite a few fans of Mystery Dungeon. Thank you. So you can that attitude. I very much would have bought it myself because the art is absolutely delightful. Except it's just too proximate to Animal Crossing. And Will is very cheap and budget oriented.
The art is good. In graphic and moving form, you can kind of see the flaws in it. It doesn't translate very well to movement. It looks way better when it's not moving. I'll say that.
Yeah, the still pictures, and when it's still, it looks better. I would do agree watching the stream. The movement looks a little weird. How far did you get? Did you actually recruit somebody else?
No, I didn't get to the recruiting. This is probably not a spoil. Well, what is this, a 15-year-old game?
Yeah, I mean, I played the original game.
14 years old, yes.
I got to the first boss battle, which I think is the end of the tutorial completely, which is against Skarmory.
Yeah.
And then I saved the Diglett.
Yep.
The three dads. No mom, but that's all right. Maybe the mom. Maybe I got to save the mom later.
You got to save the mom later.
But yeah, I got to the Skarmory battle and did that. And so I will say the quiz is extremely delightful. It told me I was sassy, cynical, but lovable.
Did you get the hand coming out of the toilet question?
No.
No.
That's why you ended up that way.
Which sassy, cynical, and lovable is supposed to be Trico. And I decided to pick Skitty because I like Skitty a lot. And then my partner, I picked a Psyduck. So I was very happy with the quiz. I thought that was really well done.
Except you didn't accept the result.
No one likes
you
Trico.
You violated the laws
what?
Of Mystery
I like
Dungeon.
Trico.
He's okay. I mean, he's fine. He's no Skitty.
He's no Cubone either.
It does ask
Cubone.
It does ask you at the end if you are like a boy or a girl, like the same Pokemon question that Professor Oak would ask you. And I'm assuming that, like, because I said I'm a boy, that's why they defaulted to Trico. I bet if I was to say a girl, Trico wouldn't have been an option, and it would have probably gave me, I don't know, what is like a, what would the sassy girl Pokemon be? I would almost say it's probably Skitty.
So that's not 100% true. Some of the natures are differentiated by gender. Some of the natures are not. But so I can't remember.
I can look it up.
Well, that's cheating then. Then you look
up
all the
answers.
I mean,
you already did it. It's not cheating if you already did it.
Maybe. Okay, so again, this is just my quick review getting up to the Skarmory, or my input. Oh, I should also probably disclose that I did.
Skitty would have been hasty.
Hasty?
It would have been hasty to get Skitty. If you had said girl, you would have gotten Torchic.
Oh, okay. I like Torchic. Full disclosure, I did not pay for Mystery Dungeon. It was sent to me by Nintendo. Big Papa Doug Bowser sent it my way. Everyone says that Mystery Dungeon's story is incredible. I am only like 2 hours in, and the dialogue is, I don't know, pretty shallow.
Wait, like, this Mystery Dungeon, or
well, that's just
the
like
sequels?
That's just like the default of like Mystery Dungeons is like, oh, the story's so good.
I mean, think for the sequels. I don't think for the original.
The story is okay in the original,
but like their dialogue is very. It's just standard Pokemon dialogue. It's like, hey, so and so, we need to go save this Diglett, and then it's just like, okay, it's like, oh, this is the like the dialogue you guys are all raving about.
No,
okay, story and dialogue are two
different
things.
Story and dialogue are different. The story and dialogue are different. The story does tend to get good. The dialogue is very simple throughout the whole thing, but like.
I feel like the dialogue adds to the story, though.
No.
It can.
It can, but I don't think in this case it takes away from this. Like, once you've gotten past where you are and you've learned everything about the game, like, it starts getting. The dialogue starts picking up more, and more things start happening. It does suffer, like, all of them, because I think this was the first. Was this the first Pokemon Mystery Dungeon crossover?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Crossover?
Yeah.
Well, because there are other Mystery Dungeon games, like Final Fantasy has a Mystery Dungeon.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes. This was the first Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, yes.
So they had an unfortunately long tutorial, because nobody had probably played a Mystery Dungeon game who had played Pokemon. Like, this was the first introduction to this. So I think I do sort of remember, like, okay, I get it. All right, I've learned everything, I get it. But I think the tutorial for this was longer than it needed to be, like the Sun and Moon issue. But then it does pick up. Like, once you're past that, you know about bosses, you know about picking up jobs, you know about what all the shops are, it gets more interesting, especially when you have more freedom. So, like, the tutorial is a good introduction to how the game works, but I don't think is a great introduction to how the story will go, how the dialogue ends up being. Once you've gotten past that and it's not holding your hand anymore.
Went into it being very optimistic. My Mystery Dungeon experience prior to this was playing. My first one was Gates to Infinity, which a lot of people say is bad. And I got all the way up to the Khan Keldr at the top of the mountain in Gates to Infinity, which is, I believe, the first boss. and then I stopped playing. And then I did play 2 to 3 hours of Explorers of Sky. And I played that with Irene, and Irene was very not interested in it in about an hour. She thought it was kind of boring. But I do remember the coughing in it. But that's all I remember, and I left that game pretty unimpressed as well. I will say that after... How long did I play it, Greg? Like two and a half, 3 hours on stream?
I left, so... I left at about 2 hours and you're still playing.
Okay, yeah, so it must have been... I probably wrapped up a little bit after you left, but I am excited to continue playing it, but I will say I the thing that turned me off from those first two games, and that's still an issue here, is the combat. I don't think it's particularly fun, and I still don't think it's fun here, but I will say the auto battle thing, which I think is new, makes up for that.
The auto movement?
The auto, like the, you can press, I think it's the L button, and your characters will like default and go to the things that they need to pick up, and they'll explore on their own.
I think auto explore, but there's no auto combat. The auto explore actually stops when you're into a combat situation.
Yeah. And I think they introduced that in the later games. I'm pretty sure you could do that in the later games.
The auto explore or the auto combat?
Auto explore. There is
no auto combat.
There is no auto combat.
The auto combat is I just press the A button and the game figures out the best attack.
Yeah.
That's pretty auto to me.
Well, but you could choose from a variety of attacks. That's actually one of my biggest complaints about Mystery Dungeon is that you just have to like memorize all these button combos.
Yeah.
Well, and you can like, press LZ, I think, and it will show the four attacks, and then you can pick it. But yep. I'm just
okay.
not interested.
Yes, you have to memorize this.
I'm just not interested in that, though. Like, if I'm fighting a Zubat and I'm going to do the electric move, the game is smart enough to go, Zubat's weak to electric, so I'm going to use Skitty's charge beam. And that's fine. That's good enough for me. Like, I'm not here for. Like, the one time I did stop and I was like, okay, I need to, the Skarmory is about to kill me. I need to like not move, because if you don't move, they don't move.
Yep.
So I'm not going to spam the A button. I'm going to like press the LZ. I'm going to look at my attacks. And it was a disaster. I was like, I don't know how this combat works. I don't know if like, if I turn, does that count for a movement, even though I'm still in the same square? And I hit the A button on accident and no one was near me. So Skitty did a spin, but that counts as moving. And so Skarmory gets it. Like, it was just a complete mess. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to keep pressing the A button and let it auto, because it was not fun to like hold the LZ. It's not the strength of the game. Maybe I'm just terrible at video games.
You are.
Oh, you are. 100%.
But, I mean, for a lot of things, yes, you can probably hit the A button to get through them. Boss battles, like, when you get seeds, when you get other things, those become more important to be able to use. So, like, picking up rocks so that if you've gotten rid of all of your distance attacks, you can still hit things at a distance, because you can throw rocks at things as they move towards you, and not waste your moves. Sleep seeds, throwing berserk seeds, like, confusion seeds. I mean, the game does get more complicated, and the bosses do get a lot harder, where you have to get more creative than just hitting the A button. Like, there is a depth to that, to all of the games, that I think they do pretty well, but you do sort of, like, it isn't, I agree that it's not intuitive. It's not a very intuitive system. You do sort of have to memorize what all the seeds do and what you have, like, what you have to do. Going on later missions, it becomes very important what you're bringing with you. So you want to bring, like, I need 4 apples. I want to bring X seeds because I know I'm going to face a boss. But I also need to leave enough space so that while I'm in the dungeon, I can pick everything up that's in there. Like, you sort of have to strike the balance between what's the minimum amount I can bring to deal with what I see in there versus I still need to have space to pick up things in the dungeon. Plus, they haven't even, at the point where you're in the game, they haven't even done monster houses yet, which is just the absolute fear in that game when you run into a monster house.
I can see the appeal, and I think that's the thing I was excited about. I don't know if this was a change, but like the first thing I thought of when I saw the bulletin board was, oh, they're going to make me only take one mission at a time. But it did let me take four or five or something. And I was like, okay, that's awesome, because three of these four are in the same cave. Then I was like, oh, okay, let me pick up three. I bet as soon as I complete one, it's going to kick me out. But when you completed the first mission, it was like, oh, you can keep going if you want. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. Like, I can do all three in a run. And then the risk reward is I'm either, like, I don't have enough apples and I'm going to get too fatigued, or I'm out of healing items and I'll have to back out. And that was, like, the appealing part to me. That was the part I actually liked. Not, like, the combat or the saving the Diglett. The risk reward of, like, I can go deeper into this cave and knock out all these missions if I am well prepared. And I think that was the fun part to me.
Yep. And it gets more complicated the more places that you open up. Like, there are some jobs where it's just like, okay, the first job is on the second floor and the last job is on the 18th floor. Is that something that I want to do right now? Because the reward for the 18th floor one is huge. Is that, do I want to spend 18 going through eight? Like, am I going to go through all 18 to get there? Is like, there's a lot to that risk reward system that's very interesting, and it gets more interesting the more you play the game. But again, like, but every the thing is, like, every dungeon it's random, which is the other thing that I've always found fascinating about that game, because you never, like, even if you were in that dungeon before, it's not the same when you go back in.
I mean, that's what's, like, so core, like, to the whole mystery dungeon. The dungeon is a mystery. It's right in the name. And, like, some people are like, I don't want the dungeons to be randomized. And I was like, well, number one, you're playing the wrong game then. Step back.
Back off.
I mean, one of the things I also don't like is I actually don't like the auto-explore, because what that really kind of reveals for me is that the point of the game is all about prepping for the dungeon and not what you actually do in the dungeon.
Oh, I think the prepping's the good part.
Okay, but for me, that's I play the video game to actually do stuff. It's not cookie clicker here, you know. I want to actually.
But I love a good cookie clicker.
I know you do. Like a Trimps myself, but
you streamed Trimps at one point
for $60 on my Switch. If I'm sitting on my couch in my living room with my 75-inch television, I want to be engaged with the content, not if watching my Cubon run through a randomized.
Cinnabon.
I would agree with you, Will, if there were more to the dungeons besides, like, four items on a floor you could pick up, which that's what I noticed right away. And I was like, oh, maybe it's just these early dungeons. And maybe they do get significantly more complicated.
They do get significantly more complicated.
But, like, besides empty rooms with enemies or, like, heal pads, I was like, oh, I'm just picking up, like, an Oran berry. Like, why?
Yeah, but there's, like, no puzzles. Like, there's no puzzles to solve to get through the dungeons other than let me make sure that I've got enough, you know, kit in my bag to get through this thing.
There are some. I mean, so at later dungeons, you get the shops. Later dungeons, you get the monster houses. Like, they do change it up as the difficulty ramps up. There are spas. There are hidden things to find if they were generated. So to say that it's always the same, I don't think is fair. But you may not find the little things that they add in interesting enough to do X amount of floors of random generated dungeons. Like, they do get more complicated. There are more complicated things to do, but they do come very late in the game, and they may not be. For some people, it's too late. You know, it's too little, too late. Like, there's just not enough interest.
Oh, absolutely.
There.
You didn't grab my attention with, you know, an hour and a half's worth of play. I'm not putting more time in.
And, like, the recruitment parts are, like, part of it also.
I haven't gotten there, but I know that's going to be frustrating to me.
Is recruitment is frustrating. It can be. Finding the scarves to make recruitment easier, buying those things, like, that's all part of the equipping to make that process better, but, like, it's still like, you have no real control over who you recruit. Like, it is a random chance after that unlocks that whoever you defeat in a dungeon will join you. Like, there are ways to manipulate it, but it's still not. It's not a given. Like, you can find that shiny, and it could be like, nope, I'm out.
Overall, I guess I don't regret my time with it. I think it's fun. I want to see where it goes more. I guess both of you didn't think it was worth the $60.
Well, so, I mean, I had played it before. I've played that game completely before. And when looking at it, thinking, I'm still very heavily invested in Sword and Shield.
Yes.
I may be investing in Animal Crossing. I'm still deciding. I have a lot of friends who want me to. That game coming in between these two things, I was like, I know how heavily I can get into Mystery Dungeon. It's not a short game. I'll play it a lot. The other games that I'm playing still have my attention right now. Like, Final Fantasy just released another huge patch. It's got a whole bunch of new dungeons that I'm working through. I'm still doing raids in Sword and Shield, and that eats up that time. I didn't feel that I wanted to pay $60 to play a game that I've already played. I played it the first time. I liked it the first time. I didn't think there was enough changes in this version to warrant me playing it again.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly like updated art and nostalgia. And
yeah.
Like, yeah, different ways of doing rescues and everything. For me, like, what it really boils down to is if I had more time and Animal Crossing wasn't just like right on the horizon next week, which I know I want to spend my time with Animal Crossing, I definitely would have bought this game. I downloaded the demo. I enjoyed the demo. And it's like, if I had more time, I would have made this my game that I play every morning, you know, when I first wake up, and like do a dungeon every morning or something stupid like that. But I know I'm going to invest heavily in Animal Crossing and be disappointed in a month and a half, and then maybe I'll come back to Mystery Dungeon. But at least for that month and a half, Animal Crossing is going to have my attention. You know, this game will still be there.
Animal Crossing for me is like a top five game of all time, but they did release a game.
It's no Katamari Damacy.
They did release multiple games that I did not like before, so that's why I'm like very hesitant. I know people are over the moon and excited, and if there's like a single new flower shown off in Animal Crossing, they like meet in like an 18-thread post on Twitter about how this new flower is amazing, but I just can't help but remember Wii game was so bad.
Oh, stop. I loved the Wii game. but generally let's put it this way. From your perspective, it was bad. From my perspective, it was absolutely fantastic, and I adored it. But my advice...
It was no Wild World, and it was no New Leaf.
I only really played New Leaf.
Which was the DS one?
Wild World.
Yeah, that was probably a crowning achievement in the whole franchise.
Yeah, how do you follow up one of the best Animal Crossing game ever?
Yeah.
With
they did have a tough follow.
Bad Town. I don't remember what the Wii one was called.
No, there were plenty of good things in City Folk. Thank
Animal
you.
Animal Crossing, Wee Little Bad Town.
Wee Little Bad Town.
But like my piece of advice for anybody who is, you know, either just like not one of those, it's Animal Crossing, I'm going to get it and love it. Doesn't matter what it is because it has the Animal Crossing name on it. So if it's like, if you've never played before, if you've been away from it for a while and coming back, or, you know, it's just like my one piece of advice is for when you first start it, and I would say even like for a week, don't discuss it with anybody. Play it on your own terms. Learn about the game. Understand the game on your own terms. Because the minute you start talking to other people, and especially if you talk to the real Animania, Animal Cross, what are the people who are very into Animal Crossing? Crossheads? The Crossheads.
Yeah.
And they start telling you about like all the achievements that they've already unlocked and the secret areas they've unlocked, and they've got this in their town and that in their town. And you're going to be like, well, I'm not going that fast. And now I feel bad. There's like this uncontrollable psychological impact that you will have, that you're going to feel bad because you're not making as much progress as other people. And just like save yourself from that. Keep your Animal Crossing experience to yourself for a while until you feel like you have accomplished enough and you're at a point where you want to ask other people for advice on how to get things, because then it's less about feeling bad that you fell behind, but more like, I've gotten to this point, I've gotten as far as I can get on my own. And it's time for me to reach out to others so I can get even further with
their help. You're gonna be behind off the bat if you didn't find five other friends with the different fruits to get the fruits to plant the fruits to get the better fruits to then sell for the money, so then you can start buying. Like I agree with you. I'm just saying
for an enjoyable experience of like creating and crafting your own town, which is the core of the Animal Crossing experience, do it on your own for a while.
No, I agree with what you said, Will. I do agree that there's this psychological thing where like somebody has like five public work projects in the first week and you don't, and sometimes that just comes down to luck. Sometimes like, well, in past games, it was just like, oh, so-and-so was able to say the right thing in the right time frame, and now you can build a lighthouse. And, you know, I played the game for 6 months, and I never got anyone to offer me to build a lighthouse, even though, you know, I did everything the guide said to do, but there's still, like, this hidden percent chance that you might not be offered to build the lighthouse. Like, I get it. But, yeah, it was frustrating during New Leaf to see everyone on Twitter posting all their public works or all their cool things, and I didn't get offered those things, even though I was playing just as much, or like I have no clue if they time hopped, and that's why they have 18 public work projects in a week. None of this makes sense to anyone who's played Animal Crossing. They're probably like, what's a public works? I don't even know if there's public works in this game, actually.
I'm not sure. No. I watched the one Nintendo Direct kind of, and happy to know that time hopping will not be possible. Thank you to the incorporation of DLC.
People will still be able to time hop. They won't be able to time hop to a season, but they'll still be able to time hop.
But they won't be able to do events.
Sure, so. But they could still put, you know, 1,000 bells in a bank and set it 5 years in the future to whatever interest rate that is.
Don't tell these people about these horrible tricks and everything.
Secrets.
I'm very excited for Animal Crossing. But going back to Mystery Dungeon, I did hear that same opinion that, oh, I would have picked up Mystery Dungeon, but I didn't want to spend $120 this month, and I only have $60. And if it's between Mystery Dungeon or Animal Crossing, I'm going to buy Animal Crossing. I've heard that so much in the past 2 weeks.
The timing is real rough. And I don't know. I don't know. Like, my own completely biased view is that they have a lot of crossover between Pokemon and Animal Crossing. That's probably not true. It's just what I see because I have a very limited scope of what's out there. But it does seem like the timing was a bit...
It's partially a bit of revenge, because the last time an Animal Crossing game came out on a system, Pokemon X and Y came out like 2 months later, and everybody was like, Animal Crossing who? I don't know her.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm out.
What happened to me as well.
So that's why now Animal Crossing is getting a little micro revenge on Pokemon. Poor Pokemon Mystery Dungeon didn't ask for this fight, but it got yanked into it either anyways.
I don't know. The new max raids are hard to resist.
We got to get a Machamp. I haven't done the Machamp yet.
Oh, I found one, but isn't it sword mostly? Like, it will appear in the other, but it's mostly sword.
Machamp is 5-star only in Sword. Gengar is 5-star only in Shield, but 3 and 4 stars will have both.
Yeah, I got a 3-star Machamp in my.
The 3 to 4 stars have a 10% chance of appearing, and then the 5 stars have a 20% chance of appearing. And before anyone tweets at me saying that Machamp and Gengar are in both games, we're talking specifically about promoted raids.
But wait, I've got the Gigantamax Gengar multiple times. Maybe I was on other people's.
Yeah.
Raids.
Yes. So, maybe. Like, if I'm playing Shield, I can find Gengars quicker than a Sword player can, and I can invite you to mine.
You never do.
Hey, the code is usually 55555.
That's you change it a lot.
You start your codes with 0. We talked about this last week.
No. I don't start. Oh, yeah. Well, no, that's like trade codes.
You can't remember from 1 week to the next.
That's trade codes. For raid codes, raids don't matter anyways, because most people will never see
you. You flip between 55555 and 7777 a lot. So don't say it's always, because I have seen you do both.
Sometimes it's all fours.
And, yeah, so it's like, nah, don't fall for your lies that you're trying to spread that you can not watch your stream and get into your raids.
Look. Let's take a break. Okay. When we come back, we'll start our questions. We get a bunch of questions from all over the internet. So we will take a quick break and we will be right back.
You know, I was in Boston. I was getting my credit card.
What are you getting? Chowder?
Chowder. I love Boston accents.
You're having a tea party?
Heck yeah. I love credit card. Chowder.
All right, let's dive into some questions. Woo! Here.
Not sure I'm ready to handle this.
Let's start off with...
What is your social security number, date of birth?
Osvetnik24, this is off our subreddit, says, episode 400 question, how have your Pokemon tastes changed over... the 400 episodes? For example, is there a Pokemon you absolutely hated towards the beginning of the time you began that you like now? Is there a game that you liked that you never wanted to touch again? Thanks for all the fun. I started listening to you guys when Sword and Shield were first announced, and I've been here every week since. Congrats on 400.
How have my Pokemon tastes changed? The weirdest thing for me is among my favorite Pokemon are fire types like Cyndaquil, Victini, stuff like that. But if you were to ask me like my favorite type of Pokemon, fire type is not like the actual type. I like fairy and I like grass and I like bug a lot. Where's my fairy bug Pokemon?
There isn't one, is there? I think I've grown to appreciate Farfetch'd more. Because of the podcast. I think over time, I've begun to hate the mechanical ones more. So, like, I was okay with... I didn't think a lot about them, but then once you're sort of on a show and you have to think about them, I think my dislike for things like Magnemite and Clink and Clang and all of them
so
has
Magearna
grown.
So, Magearna was pretty much the apotheosis of the nadir of Pokemon life for you.
Yep. Don't like it.
At least for me, over 400 episodes... I think you realize how just like your tastes do change over time, and there's documentation of that.
That is very true. There's people who've been listening for a long time who can pull out some old chestnuts, and I'm like, actually, even people who haven't been listening for a long time but decide to go through that back catalog, and they're like, I remember 30 years ago you said this. I'm like.
Look, I don't remember what we said last week, so don't quote me about 30 years ago.
I definitely remember early on looking for Pokemon that felt niche, like Grumpig or even Golduck, I think at the time, although like I had a pretty good story with Golduck. But now I like those Pokemon I don't think about as much, and it's probably because we have like more Pokemon and more Pokemon that I can... that I like significantly more than Grumpig. I don't get any problems with Grumpig, but also at the same time, no one ever talks about Grumpig.
It's probably like that whole like psychological or social psychology thing where it's like you can only have like eight close friends or something like that.
Yeah.
And like once you get another close friend, one of those other ones gets knocked out of the... And it's like you... Once Cramorant showed up, some other Pokemon...
Had to go.
You were wild for Cramorant.
I was still pretty wild for Cramorant. Yeah,
I also think like Steve, you probably have a very different experience about your changing tastes because you're just younger. Like for Will and I, we weren't kids when all of this started. We were
very true.
in our 20s. So you, as you know, a kid, like at, when you become an adult, going back to those games is a very different experience for you than it is for me, because I have very, once you get past 20 kids, your tastes don't change that much. They change some, but not as wildly as, you know, if you were 10 when the games came out, and now here you are in your 30s trying to go back to those games because you'll see the flaws that you didn't see as a kid. Whereas for me, I saw the flaws immediately because they weren't my childhood games. Like, I have gone back to my childhood games and go, why did I like this? Which is a lot of the Final Fantasy stuff.
I thought E.T. on the Atari 2600 was an amazing and fantastic achievement. Oh,
I was never that dumb.
What? Excuse me?
I am also younger than you. I was a small child. I don't think that counts as dumb.
I think like a game like Pokemon Go has done that for specific Pokemon. Like, I don't think a lot of people really particularly cared about, what's a good example? Maybe like Chimecho.
Corsola?
Corsola, that's a good one too. Yeah. Or like Chimecho, which is incredibly rare and spawns in the wild. And if somebody saw their first Chimecho, that would probably be pretty exciting. Unless they're extremely casual and they didn't know how rare Chimecho is, but...
Hi, me, raise his hand.
Yeah, Chimecho is real, real, real rare in Pokemon Go. And if you catch it, fun fact, you get 3,000 Stardust instead
Dang.
Of the normal whatever Stardust you would get. Because it gives you bonus Stardust.
I'm checking to see if I've got a Chimecho right now because I'm the most passive player.
I think as I've met more people through the podcast, like their favorite Pokemon has raised my opinion of that Pokemon some. Learning people's favorites has also changed my perspective on them a little. Like, listening to the PAX East, West, South list is always fascinating, and that does change some things.
That's true. That's fun. And I actually, from my involvement in the podcast, have just like found out so much more in-depth stuff about individual Pokemon. Like, I always really enjoyed the electric line.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like in like learning about it and researching it and finding out that only the middle evolution ever learns any new moves or anything, and like the first evolution and the last evolution can't learn any new moves. That's like fascinating. Like,
yeah,
it's really cool. Makes that Pokemon that much cooler to have that deeper knowledge of how it operates.
Do you guys think that Pokemon will one day allow you to play as an adult protagonist in the series? If so, what kind of things would you like to see in a more mature take on Pokemon?
I think they already started leaning into this a little bit. This is actually a really good question. This was from Ty on Reddit.
Yep.
So in Sword and Shield, unless I'm terribly mistaken, I don't think I am, they actually don't mention your age at all. Which I think is a really good first step in general. I don't think it's any secret, and I'm sure the Pokemon company knows better than we do of, you know, who's buying their game, where they're buying their game, the age of those players, the background of those players, whether they're college students or high school students or, you know, working adults. I'm sure they know all that information that they will probably never release, but I'm almost positive they don't mention your age at all.
I don't think they do. I don't remember them.
I think the main problem with that concept, like let's say we had the opportunity to do full character customization and you could set whatever age you wanted your character, player character, to be in the game. The issue with that is kind of impactful on the story. Because if I were to start the game as a 47-year-old, why don't I have any Pokemon yet?
Yeah.
You know, it's like starting the game as a youth kind of is the impetus for why you're starting a Pokemon journey versus, well, I guess I never did the Pokemon thing, even though my entire world revolves around Pokemon. Guess I'll get into it now.
I mean, I think they will never... I think, like Steve said, the abstraction will continue. Like, they will probably just drop the age completely and just never mention it. I think they might do more with customization so that you'd have a little bit more to look a little younger or a little older if you wanted. But I don't think... I think in games like this, it pays better for them to have that avatar be more general than specific. And it allows, like, them to tell the story that they want to tell without having it to be like, well, why would an adult listen to these people? Like, why? That wouldn't happen. And like,
exactly.
Like, they do mention that you're younger in Sword and Shield in the fact that Sonya and Leon are like, let the adults handle this a couple of times. Like, they do point out that you are younger while not ever stating that you are an exact age. It is definitely implied that you are at least pre-18 or whatever they consider an adult.
I think pre-18 is probably the best way to put it. Somewhere between 12 and 18, I think.
And I don't know that we will get anything out of making an adult protagonist that isn't already... Like, I don't know that that enhances the game. Because I think it's a different question than what do you think is a more mature take. Because I think you can still do more mature and still have a youngish protagonist.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said that, like, a lot of people missed the story beats of Sun and Moon or Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, where that, just in case maybe you skipped over because the tutorial was too long in Sun and Moon, one of the core parts of the storyline is about verbal abuse between adults and kids. Specifically with, like, Lily and Lusamine, and that's as pretty mature as it gets. And I've always said that, like, most adults don't understand verbal abuse.
Yeah.
More or less, like, kids understanding it. Just some trivia here. Calum and Serena, they never talk about their ages in X and Y.
Yeah, I was going to say, in any of the games, which of the games have they specified your age?
They specify in, like, Red and Blue that you're, like, 10 years old. I think in Gold and Silver, they also specify you're 10 years old. In Sun and Moon, they actually specify that you're 11 years old with Celine and Elio, I think their names are. And then, so they didn't specify age in X and Y, and they didn't specify age in Sword and Shield. At least in the video games. I don't know. They might have in the manga.
What do we think, like, more mature take on Pokemon? I don't know. I think they can, like, they started to do more mature storylines in Sun and Moon. I think they can definitely do that in a more mature take on it. But, it'd have to really be a one-off. And they'd have to be really careful about what they decide to take on. Part of the charm is, for me, is that it's somewhat abstracted, that there's an abstraction there and it doesn't really ask you to think much deeper than what they're presenting you. I think the danger of doing a more mature take on anything is you can, unless you're incredibly careful, you'll easily make something very problematic. And as people have proven, it's hard for them to accept new visions and new takes on things without it affecting their previous experiences of it.
True.
So I think they could probably tell deeper stories, but I think they should probably limit that to more interpersonal stories like they did in Sun and Moon, and they touched a little bit in Sword and Shield. Like, you know, Bede's entire storyline is probably one of the best things about Sword and Shield. And I think they can do more of that and get into that in more depth, but I think they would probably want to avoid the weird conversations people have about your relationship with Pokemon and what that actually looks like. I think delving really far into that without being super careful about it is going to be super problematic.
I mean, they already avoid the hard conversations of, like, oh, we don't know what to do with Lusamine. What do we do with Chairman Rose?
Send them off. Well, yeah, Chairman Rose just disappeared, didn't he?
Yeah.
So I think there's a couple of issues also with a more mature take, right? Just the concept of that. One is A lot of times people take more mature to mean darker.
Correct.
Which does not have to be the case. It can just mean more complex, and introducing more complexity into the story concepts of the game, where there's more subplot, subtext, deeper, you know, characterization and everything. But the main issue that I think will always be the biggest hurdle to a, quote, more mature take on Pokemon is Pokemon is intended to be an all-ages game. And once you make it, you know, Final Fantasy X, that really takes out a lot of the younger audience, right? Because kids, you know, from maybe like 6 years old to 11 years old aren't interested into a troubled romance of separated lovers, right? Which is, you know, that's a good trope in a more mature. I will never say Pokemon's a kid's game. I will always say it's an all ages game.
It's an all ages game.
And I think that the intent of the creators of Pokemon is for it to always be an all ages game. And it would take a huge shift in their philosophy to move away from the concept of an all ages game.
I will say this, that I would like, and unfortunately people will see this as a more mature take on Pokemon. It's not. I would like to see a wider variety of relationships represented in my Pokemon games. Like, we are finally starting to get there with skin color diversity. It would be nice to have other diversity that is not considered mature, but just part of the universe.
Hey, they got Steven and Marlin.
Wallace!
Yeah. Oh, Wallace, sorry.
Oh my god!
Razorblade here on Reddit asks, do you think if Pokemon was never made, could there be another game that would have created the same impact or impression in your life? If so, which one?
Final Fantasy was that game until Pokemon came. Like, I was a huge, huge, huge Final Fantasy fan. And I still am, to some extent, but not as much as I am with Pokemon. So if Pokemon never existed, then I would be probably on a Final Fantasy podcast.
That's the deepest and darkest timeline right there.
Yep.
I mean, I've already recorded 15 episodes of Katamari Cast. I'm just not released yet.
I haven't even been on it yet. How rude.
Look, there's a long line of people who want to be on Katamari Cast. So, you know, you'll get your turn.
I'm one of the cousins you have to unlock by rolling me up.
For me, it probably would have been like a World of Warcraft or another MMO. I don't know what MMOs existed back in the EverQuest, I think, was one
EverQuest of them. EverQuest was the big one before. I mean, there were a bunch of small ones.
Yeah.
But like EverQuest was EverQuest, and then WoW happened, and there was like EverWhat. Let's all go play WoW because WoW's fun.
Yeah, so I don't even think that if Pokemon didn't have the transfer from Pokemon to Pokemon from each game, I don't think it would have been as impactful as it was on me. And an MMO has always kind of had that, and that's why I was so into Destiny, and they kind of ruined that. But I put a lot into the first 3 years of Destiny because I wanted to collect everything because I was sold that this would be like a 10-year game. And it ended up being a 3-year game, and you got to start over in year 4, which kind of killed a lot for me. And the internet was not.
Is there ever going to be a Destiny 3? Because I could get back into it. I got a real nice TV
I think
now.
Bungie is working on a game for some big Chinese money.
That game is not Destiny.
I don't think so. I think they're in the pockets of Big China.
Big Chinese money.
I get in the pockets of Big China.
You can't because you're allergic to soy.
Look, there are soy alternatives.
Not according to Big China.
Big China or not, I'm confident that there are people who gave up on Pokemon when the jump from Gen 2 to Gen 3 was made.
There were some, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was necessary. I will still stand by Gen 3 is the most important gen.
So, okay, let's put it this way. Thinking of impact on your life, what game outside of Pokemon has had the biggest impact on your life?
Oh, Shining Force.
Shining Force.
Yep.
In what
way? Absolutely. So Shining Force was the first, when I snuck down to Chicago when my then boyfriend, now husband's parents were gone for the weekend, and we were looking for something to do that would keep us inside, because going out in public as a couple was a little risky.
What wasn't a thing during those days.
It wasn't a thing, but it was also risky because he had nosy neighbors and I wasn't supposed to be there. We went to Blockbuster and rented a Sega and rented Shining Force and played that game all weekend. We didn't leave the house. We ordered food in and we just played that game, which is, it's why my wedding invites were Shining Force themed.
I wasn't invited.
I didn't know you then. And the one person I sort of knew, Steve, didn't come.
How rude.
There's a lot of regrets back then.
But like that game is huge. Like that game is huge in my life. Simply because I have so many positive memories attached to it. Like that's like everybody has us, like this is our song. That is our game. Like that is a game we talk about. That is a game we played a lot of with. That is a game that was a huge bonding thing for my husband and I. So like that is a big game in my life. But like there's not a lot of them, and they just stopped sending them over here. So it didn't have a continuation. But I will always put that as an important game in my life. That's like probably the most important game in my life.
I would probably say for myself, obviously Katamari Damacy is it just very much like if you put Katamari Damacy on something, you're going to get Will Anderson's money. but that's more because just the gameplay is so simple, but yet still engaging. And it's just almost like, you know, encapsulated joy. That it just you go in there, the way the music and the graphics and everything comes together, you can't step away unhappy, right? It just brings happiness into your heart playing Katamari Damacy. It's silly, but you know, you listen to that music and you know you're rolling that ball, you're picking up weird things. Who even knows why anything's happening? That's that. I will say that the one game that, like, for story that I got really engrossed in and just like looked forward to, I'm very unhappy that you can't get it anymore, you know, that it's not available, not pushed forward into systems, is everything from the Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver series, just because I just found that that whole, like, what is it? Like, the environment and the lore and everything of those games, which I think there were, like, five or six of the games. I only played...
There are a lot of them.
I only played, like, the last three or four of them when they were on, like, PS1, PS2 with Raziel. It just, like, it was so gripping for me, and that I would, like, literally, like, call in sick to work to sit at home and play that game for 8 hours just to get through it, to see how the story was going to unfold. And, you know, there wasn't much internet to look at back, you know, when those games were out, but I would look up and I was like, what can I find out about like these other extra dimensional creatures that are involved and like all the twists and the different things that were happening and how different people were being manipulated. And it's just like that game, like, if I could get a master series of that. But in saying all of that, I was just reminded that I was going through some boxes and I found my Myst Masterpiece Edition.
Oh, Myst.
And that game, I can think back to like 1994 and sitting in front of a computer for 6 hours trying to solve those puzzles. I put it in my computer like last week. And I can't even play it because the graphics are so bad. It can't even render the graphics. But boy, oh boy, Myst was a game changer and has never been replicated. Absolutely not. You know, when it comes to lore and just like the simplicity of what it offers, but the depth of what it communicates, there you go. All right, Steve, what's your answer?
Destiny.
We did have a lot of good times with Destiny. That's true.
I mean, I will say World of Warcraft was my first MMO, and that was a game changer as far as what MMOs were.
Hey, SBJ and crew, my birthday is coming up March 15th, and I wanted to let you guys know that you really helped me get through the day, and I appreciate you all. I started listening to your podcast last fall when I was getting back into Pokemon after a hiatus of not playing. Thank you for is this a question?
Yeah.
There is one
it's
in there.
The end.
Yeah.
It's getting the, it said, they okay. said long, long thing.
Thank you for reinvigorating my interest in a franchise I love so dearly. I was wondering what your very first shiny Pokemon you caught was, and what went through your head when you saw that sparkle. Mine was an Alolan Geodude. I remember feeling my heart skip a beat as the excitement set in because it was a complete surprise. That's from Aiden.
I know what mine was.
You do know?
Yeah.
What was it?
So I was playing, I want to say it was Diamond. And I was over in an area that sort of, you know, that because they have that separate island that you went to. And I was traveling through and a Ladian popped up and it was shiny. And I'm like, oh, really? This is my first shiny Ladian? Fine. And then I caught it. That was my first wild shiny. I will say, the first shiny that I hunted ever was I bred a shiny Rosalia in Emerald, but that was like me specifically hunting for that. So finally getting it, because there was no way of manipulating the odds. I was like, I don't know, thousands of eggs in, and it finally happened. That was just like, oh, relief. So it wasn't like, I don't really count that as my first shiny because I was specifically trying to get that. So my first ever wild encounter was Ladian, and it was like, yay, oh.
I'm pretty sure, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure my first wild, really my first shiny for me was in White 2. I got a shiny Lillipup on that ranch where they had the herd ears and the Lillipups and everything. Right in the starting part. So that I was, you know, a little excited for it. I think I named it after my dog at the time. But probably my most exciting shiny moment was in X and Y when I was in that forest before you get to the where the Mewtwo is, like the animal village area. You know, that forest maze. You had to do an X and Y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I came across a Trevenant in a Horde battle. And I was just like, it was like so unexpected and so surprising for me. And like the way that like the Trevenant shiny looks, especially when you're in a Horde battle.
It's real good.
And there's like one white one, you know, and all the other dark ones. That was like probably my most exciting shiny moment.
Way better than Ladian.
Steve, are you even able to feel excitement about shinies anymore, or is it just all like an act?
It's not an act. I've come full circles on shinies, from not caring about them to caring about them, kind of going back to not caring about them. I don't have I think all my shiny moments are documented pretty well.
So, how hard is it to get a shiny authentic?
What's Sinistee?
Authentic Sinistee. But will
is very tough.
Will they have a mark though?
Ugh.
What? What's the mark?
Marks are ribbons you cannot earn.
I know nothing about Sinistee, or less than nothing about Sinistee. I just keep buying pots. I still haven't even encountered the Pokemon.
Is this a genuine question? If you don't know what marks are,
I don't know what marks are.
Marks are ribbons. Except you cannot earn them. They just appear on Pokemon when you catch them.
Oh, are they the titles?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's like 25 of them, I think.
Can I search for them in Pokemon Home?
I don't think you can search by ribbons in Home. I don't think so.
So I may have a bunch of marks and just not even realize it.
That's possible, yeah. You have to go under the ribbon and then hit up and down and check them all.
Boy, oh boy.
Gotta check them all.
This is from Queen Hawk. Loved Maddie on the Mood Move this episode. Probably my favorite segment so far. And then Brown Speckled Bear also said this episode was great. Loved Maddie on the Move. I liked when you guys got into the weeds about different types of Pokemon that have been given out in the past, including Steve's freakout over Pokemon Box. Also, if anyone knows, I can't get into my Pokemon Pass anymore. Has this been killed by the Pokemon Company? I forgot to claim my shiny Solgaleo. Yeah, I don't think Pokemon Pass works anymore. That Pokemon Pass, personally, because it wasn't released worldwide, this is just my opinion, I think it was literally just a testing bed for what Pokemon Home will do in the future when it comes to codes and generating stuff. Although the shiny Solgaleo, shiny Lunala thing, I think actually expired. Expired January 15th.
Mine says new activities coming soon.
I'm sure it does. I don't see why they would rely on Pokemon Pass since Pokemon Home is worldwide.
Yeah, and I think they specifically said that it's going to have features that basically replicate what Pokemon Pass was doing.
Yeah, I mean, if you go into Pokemon Home, there's like a mystery gift area. Yeah, mystery gift, and then check for local events, which Pokemon Pass was doing. And then the gift box is where you would see the past things you've redeemed before. So I'm assuming if they do another target event, you walk in, you open Pokemon Home, you go to local event check, it checks your GPS, and does the thing it does. This is from Dirk off our YouTube comments. If you could have a new Apricorn ball in Sword and Shield, what would it do / look like?
Oh, boy.
I mean...
I'm trying to remember what ones we already have.
Dive bar, ball, lure ball. Well, dive ball is the Apricorn. I think there needs to be a rework to some of the balls because dive ball and lure ball are like very similar. Like lure ball specifically works if you're fishing, but dive ball specifically works when you're like on water or fishing. Which is
but there's like three balls for water types, right? You get yeah. The net ball, the dive
net ball,
ball,
yeah, which is like water and bug.
So, let's see. We got level ball, friend ball, lure ball, moon ball, heavy ball, fast ball, and love ball.
And love ball works when you're, like, catching of opposite gender, right?
Of your own. Fast ball.
Fast ball is based on their speed, right? Like, the faster they are, the more accurate it is.
I think so.
Level
heavy
ball.
Heavy ball.
Yeah, which doesn't work on Gigantamax Pokemon because they don't have weight. I mean, it can
moon
work.
Ball
it would just work as a Pokeball.
Things that evolve using a moonstone?
Yep, that's like real silly.
Wild. So, lure ball is catching fishing line easier.
Mm-hmm. But net ball applies to all water Pokemon.
Right. Friend ball just makes them friendlier. And level ball is what? Level, if they're lower level than you?
Right. It increases the catch rate. By how high your level is. The higher level you are from them, the better the catch rate is.
It's the difference between your levels.
Yes.
So that's
so
the
I would make the diamond ball that makes catching things that evolve using a shiny stone easier. It'd be
Why is there a moon ball?
Yeah, it's
what
wild.
What the heck is that?
Yeah, that's wild. But yeah, so I would go with diamond ball.
I would go with get rid of half of the evolution stones and just give me like a Sinnoh stone or a Unova stone.
Look, we already got rid of the mossy rock and the icy rock.
Yes.
You're taking away the whole challenge of this game, man. Every day, I am over there at Stonehenge grubbing in the ground to see what kind of rock I can pick up for that day. What is my life? I'm like, is the Eevee that I need there? No, not Espeon today. All right, let me kill that bugger. Okay, now I'm going to go scrounge for rocks at Stonehenge.
On an unrelated note, I do like how they give you a limited amount of Apricorn balls because it does encourage you to breed and trade.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I don't know if, you know, before anyone goes, well, like the DLC says we'll get more Apricorn balls. Sure, there's also a way to get more Apricorn balls now, and it's through the Champion Cup. And good luck, because I've known people who have done 30, 40, 50 Champion Cup battles in a day and haven't gotten a single one. They did say there's going to be a way to get Apricorn Balls. It could be incredibly easy, or it could be incredibly tedious like the Champion Cup. We don't actually know. But I do like the limited ecosystem of they're giving you a reason to trade, because I don't think there's a lot of good reasons to trade right now. Like, oh, I already have a Lickitung. Why do I need your Lickitung? But I don't have a Lickitung in a friend ball, so I would gladly take that from you. I'm surprised there's not Pokeballs based off weather conditions. Like, this one works in the rain, this one works in the snow, this one works in the sandstorm.
And yeah, why don't we have a Dawn Ball to go along with the Dusk Ball? Right? So, Dusk Ball works at night. Can I get something to work in the day?
Y'all need to pick which one are you making. I already picked my ball. You're all talking about what we're missing. Which one are you adding?
I would add a Pokeball that works in the snow.
A snowball?
Writes itself.
I am going to make a ball that works only on water Pokemon that are actually fish.
The scale ball?
No amphibians. Nothing that's like a low tad. No, only Goldeens.
Goldeens and Magikarps. And
Bruxishes.
Sea King. No, I think I would go with the Dawn Ball. I like balance, right? I like balance. If there's going to be a Dusk Ball, I want a Dawn Ball, right? If there's going to be a heavy ball, I want a light ball.
There's a light ball. Pikachu can hold it. It makes
I am aware.
Yeah.
Boy, editor needed to go back and make some adjustments on that text.
Yeah. I like this one. Which game, Pokemon or not, gives you the most nostalgia or reminds you of your childhood?
That was from Stephanie on YouTube.
Space Invaders.
My child, yeah, boy.
Space Invaders was huge. I played that game a lot in the old arcades.
Yeah, Centipede. Probably for me, Centipede. I actually had a book on, like, strategies for playing Centipede.
I had a book on strategies for Centipede. I had a book on strategies for Asteroids.
Asteroids, I could not play. The physics in that game.
Yeah, the physics in that game were they were unforgiving.
And one game that I was obsessed with and I just could not play, Robotron. I actually had a book on Robotron too.
I hated Robotron. Hated it because I couldn't play it because the two joysticks were, one of them was always broken.
Well, but the thing is, like, Robotron had such depth of story
for an arcade game.
For the arcade game that it was. And it's like, you've got to save your family from becoming mutants.
It was dark. I will say the other one that's really big, Dragon's Lair. My brother and I played a lot. And we would act out the levels at home to try to figure out to get the timing down to do them right so you could get to the end. So I have a fondness for Dragon's Lair only as a connection to my brother. But
Dragon
Slayer
was the one that was kind of animated, wasn't
it? Yeah,
it
was the animated one. Yep.
I could never get past the first level.
Like Space Ace better, but Dragon Slayer was the first, and my brother and I played that a lot at the skating rink.
You know, but in middle school, I used to play, I think it was Jumpman. I'm not 100% sure if that was the name of it, because there's a couple of games that are very similarly named, but it was literally, it was like almost like a Mario clone. You're just on platforms climbing up and down and then jumping to collect rings, and you had to collect all the rings in the level to complete the level. Oh, man, I would obsess on that game.
I was a huge fan of Donkey Kong Jr. My first game that I collected actual things for was Pac-Man. Like, I had Pac-Man sheets, I had a Pac-Man book, I had a Pac-Man arcade machine. Like, I was a big Pac-Man fan.
You had Pac-Man fever. Okay,
I did. I had that album. I had that album and I listened to it a lot. All right, so 80s time is over. Steve, what's yours?
How can I compete with 80s time?
You can't, but try.
It's true. Probably Sonic the Hedgehog 2 and 3. And
gotta get fast.
Probably Ristar were the games that was a lot of my younger childhood that wasn't Pokemon.
Wrist Star?
Yeah, it was made by... It was a Sega Genesis game.
I can confirm the name of the game was Jumpman.
Excellent. Oh, wait, I know Wrist Star. I do know that game. R-I-S-T-A-R, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was developed and published by Sega. I can't remember. There's the people who made it made like some other popular games too, but I probably played that game a million times because I liked everything about it.
And yet there's no Ristar cast.
Nope. No Ristar cast at all.
No deep lore about a game series that's no longer made.
I'm going to be silent for the rest of the episode as I watch YouTube videos of Jumpman playthroughs. But it's nice knowing y'all.
Are there any Jumpman speedruns?
It's all speedruns, dude.
We'll do one more question before our break. This is from Stev. Should I get Animal Crossing?
No. Yes. I don't know. I haven't decided. Don't ask me these things.
What you want out of life. I mean, should you learn to play guitar? Should you take up knitting? Should you lift heavy? I mean, maybe?
I will say this. As in most Animal Crossing games, if you're on the fence at all, buy it within the first week or so when everybody's still really active and you can go visit everybody's towns. About a month later, when everybody's really upset about the fact that you had to check in every day, all the casuals are gone and only the hardcore players are there, and those people are wild. So get in early and get out early if you're going to do it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If you're going to pull the trigger, you better pull it on day one.
pull it on day one or at least week one while people are still really jazzed about it.
If you're friends with Nick in Canada, you can buy it anytime because he will take your town under his wing and turn it into a glorious empire.
Friends with Nick in Canada, though.
So, well, I mean, that's what's holding you back.
I know. I need to go to Canada as well.
Why start now?
I'm not going to.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we got some more questions to get through. So we will be right back. All right, this is from Monster off YouTube. Hey, Pokemon podcast. I found the podcast long time ago, around episode 150 or so. But unfortunately, I stopped listening for a really long time. When I still found you guys are still doing podcasts, I immediately searched on Spotify, and now for the past 2 months, I've been listening every week. So glad to find you guys again with all those years. You really helped me cope with my passing of my great-grandmother. At a time, I have many questions I could ask, but I feel this is the most fitting. What is your favorite Pokemon and why? Love hearing your responses. Love you guys. Keep up the good work. Probably documented unless it's changed. Mine is Cramorant.
And
of all
why?
Time?
Oh. All time, Will.
And why? And why?
Hey, don't ask questions you don't want answers for.
I want an answer for that one.
Yeah.
It's part of the question.
The derpiness of Cramorant. I think it's really cute and really fun to look at. I think it's just a fun design overall.
Do you like cute Pokemon or cool Pokemon? why is all of the world divided into cute or cool?
Yeah.
I like cute and cool.
Cute and cute, cool.
I mean, mine is well documented. I love the entire Rosalia line. Rosalia is probably my favorite, although I am very partial to Roserade because you can actually use it in the game to do things. The design to me is just, like, it's super cute. Also, I like a lot of the thought that went behind it. I think it's really, it I think it's a really interesting take on a plant coming to life along the lines of Oddish. It's like another type of Oddish. It's a rose plant coming to life. I use it to defeat the battle tower in Colosseum. Like, I've had a strong attachment to that Pokemon ever since I first saw it in Ruby and Sapphire. And it's just, it's cute, it's tiny, it's powerful. Like, it hits all the boxes that I like. And I think it's really well designed.
My favorite Pokemon just changes too much. I mean, Cyndaquil is like an always there because my first Pokemon game was Yellow, so I didn't get to pick a starter. So when I got Pokemon Gold and I got to pick a starter, that's when I picked Cyndaquil because the other starters are hot garbage.
Correct.
But man, it's just like, if I was going to get a tattoo of a Pokemon, I think I'd really get a Victini. Like a really like well-drawn, good, like realistic art Victini, I think would be that spot for me. Just because I really appreciate what Victini represents. And it, like, I like to like be reminded of like that positive thinking that comes behind Victini. That's probably going to be the one that like sticks with me for a really long time. Congrats on 400 episodes, SBJ, Will, Greg, and all of the other co-hosts that have graced this podcast over the years. Not going to make this comment very long, but thank you to everyone who has contributed to the many aspects of PKMNcast over the years. I know that the show has personally impacted my life in more ways than one. The amount of work and dedication that is put into the show is truly remarkable. There is no way I can repay you all for the amount of enjoyment I have received from this show. Congrats on 400. Here's to the next 400. Thanks, Pat from Palette. That wasn't a question, Patrick.
How dare you leave kind words?
I will ask the question that he asked me earlier today, which was, will you tell Steve and Greg congratulations on 400 episodes? And I texted him back and said no.
Perfect. I was like, tell them
yourself, dude.
Dakota says, "Hey, new to the podcast. My question is, how does everyone's schedule end up working? Asking for my own contemplation.
Like, how do we make recording this work?"
You guys have it easy.
I do specifically set aside time. Like, Sundays around the time that we schedule are just always a no. Like, I have something to do. If it's unavoidable, then we'll talk about when we can schedule it. But it isn't easy. Like, it is a priority that is on my calendar to say, this time is blocked off. And I have changed my shopping patterns and eating patterns to adjust accordingly.
We have, over the past 7.5 years that I've been doing this program, migrated the day and time that we record this program so frequently. It's just, yeah. I mean, you just like try to set down a time, but also have the flexibility, understanding that things happen in people's lives that we have to, accommodate for. And I mean, the biggest driving factor is obviously Steve wants to be able to stream Monday through Saturday. And I think what a lot of people don't understand is editing a podcast does take a lot of time and focus. And like, that's not just the recording part.
Right.
That's listening back, making sure the audio quality is top notch. And I hope everyone appreciates the amount of work that Steve puts into making like really good sounding audio. Because if you want me to point you to some really bad sounding podcasts out there so you can learn to appreciate what you're getting in your ears right now, I've got a list. But yeah, even because I edit my own podcasts and, just the time and effort to try to make sure that they sound good, it's a lot.
It's a lot. It's why I don't do it.
So you don't want to be doing that on a day, you know, that you're also required to be streaming, required to be streaming for 4 or 5 hours. Also, and I don't know, like, if Steve and Greg feel the same way, one of the other hard things is it's almost like you don't get a day off from work at all, because, like, for me, I work Monday to Friday, and then Saturday is when I edit the Cardfight Vanguard podcast that I do, right? So that's, like, I have to do that on Saturday. I want to keep to a schedule where I am releasing that podcast on Saturdays. So, like, for me, Saturday is a work day, and then Sunday when we record this, it's like, my Sunday is organized around recording this program. I mean, I do it because I like to do it, right? I enjoy the feedback that I get from people, that they like hearing the things that we have to say, that we, you know, make them laugh, make them happy and everything. I was like, that there's value in that, but it's comes because of the amount of work that we put into it.
Yep. I mean, we made it a priority.
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
You just have to make, like, I also work Monday through Friday. I record Tuesday nights. I have set events where I have to see people. Like, as an adult, I've always said this, like Wednesdays are off limits because that's when I go see a certain group of friends. We've all agreed as adults, this is the time that we're going to see each other. Because if you don't schedule that time, you don't. It's so easy to lose track of, well, I'm super tired, or, you know, I've got this going on, or I have this free time, so I'm going to go get this project. Like, it's really easy as an adult to, if you don't make time for it, to just let it go by, because there's so many different things pulling your attention. So, like, I have a very, like, people, I have set schedule of when I see people for certain things, like Thursday Night Magic, I record on Tuesdays. Saturday mornings, I do work on the game that I put out and getting that out. Like, I have to schedule these things so, A, I don't get overwhelmed, but B, they don't just disappear.
Yeah, I mean, I'm living in a no-day-off cycle, which is, you know, what I signed up for. I kind of thought about that a little bit more because my dad, I was talking to my dad the other day, and he's like, I don't understand why you keep doing this. Like, you don't have a day off. Is it really worth the money you're making? And I guess you could easily ask that question to, like, an actor or an actress or a wrestler or a musician. I'm sure somebody who is touring the world, I'm sure that's very hard on them.
Yep. I left acting for that very reason. I left acting because when you did get a day off, it meant you weren't getting paid anything. Like, it's an incredibly hard life, and I decided that wasn't worth it.
Hey, find a job you love and you'll never work a day in your life.
That is such garbage. That is the most garbage advice.
It is. You are so right. It basically, here's what the truth is. Find a job that you love, and in 5 years, you'll hate it.
Yep.
And I'm even if it wasn't the hours or the stuff for work, it's even going back to the wrestler analogy. I mean, those wrestlers are probably not seeing their kids a whole lot since they're on the road. And with me, like, I don't get to see Irene a whole lot. Like, she gets off work at 5. I start streaming at usually 6. And by the time I'm done, she's sleeping. And it's just, like, kind of the sacrifice I've made to create content. And the problem with creating content is it's extremely competitive. There's no secret that content creator is the number one job that kids want to be. And what they write on their little homework sheets when the teacher asks, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, it used to be astronaut. It used to be,
I want to be a fire person.
Yeah, fire president or astronaut or race car driver. Like, it is content creator. It's YouTuber, pod, whatever. My schedule is usually Monday through Friday, 6 to midnight. So that's 30 hours streaming. And then on Saturday, I only stream for about 4 hours. So we're about 34 hours streaming. And then Sunday, which is quote unquote my day off for podcasting, it is, we record the show, which usually takes 3 to 4 hours, and then it's another 3 to 4 hours to edit it, and then afterwards it's queuing it up for posting, you know, getting it uploaded, getting it ready for YouTube now, getting it ready for social media. And so my Sundays are like a full 8-hour, sometimes 10-hour day. And then on top of that, now have to, I don't know what the word for it is, like advertise or get my name out there and making content that people would want to share or enjoy or like or favorite, all these buzzwords. But I've really stepped up my Instagram game. Besides putting the podcast on YouTube now, there's two new YouTube videos that come out on Monday or Wednesday and Friday. Because the problem is, if you slow down on making content, you slowly start to become irrelevant. And a good analogy of this would be, you know, something like a Sears or a Kmart. You know, at one point they were very popular household name companies that, you know, you just, hey, if I need a refrigerator, I'm going to go to Sears. If I need pencils for the school year, I'm going to go to Kmart. And, you know, they didn't adapt and evolve. Another good analogy would like be like Blockbuster. And they closed down. So it's as easy as a content creator to kind of fall in that same path of like, if I just continue doing the same old stuff, I run the risk of becoming irrelevant or having other content creators take that spot. And it's just how it is. So that's probably why the podcast has like slightly changed over the years in a way.
Oh, we've changed a lot over the years.
We have.
Trust. I've been here for a front row seat. We've changed a lot.
We've learned a lot. It's why I always try new things on this Twitch stream. It's why I am now, you know, doing stuff outside of that. And at the end of the day, going back to my dad's, like, why don't you just get a traditional job, which is probably the easy answer of, like, I could easily make more money. Once I get work off work at 5 p.m., I'm done. I don't have to worry about, you know, did this tweet get enough retweets? Did this Instagram post get enough likes? I wouldn't have to worry about that. At the end of the day, I just like doing this. I like being a constant in people's life. Like, there's nothing more exciting than waking up on Monday and seeing people say positive things about the episode if they've already listened to it. There's nothing like hitting go live on Monday evening and having people tell me about their weekends and just like reading all these comments this week, whether it was on YouTube or Slack or Reddit or Twitter or whatever, is like worth it enough for me to have these really long work weeks time and time again. To answer your question, I don't have a day off ever.
That's not true. You take vacations, and then Greg and I go in and examine the map of Galar.
Yep.
That's true, though.
We are there to help. Like, take your vacations. Like, it is important. Like, I also want to stress for people who the mental health and well-being of your favorite streamer is affected by their nonstop workload. So, be aware that when they take a vacation, like, it is vital for them to continue making content for you to enjoy and not slowly descend into very dark places, as a lot of content creators have. It's a hard line. It's a hard job. And they do need those times off.
You guys want to take a question here?
I'll ask from Layton. Hey, SBJ and the rest of the podcast family is wondering, if we didn't currently have DLC coming for a third pillar in the Sword Shield era, would you prefer an enhanced game like Emerald and Platinum or a sequel like Black 2 and White 2?
Sequel.
Enhanced. I loved Platinum. I loved Emerald. I like the enhanced versions more than the sequels, but Steve?
I don't know.
Pick!
Yeah, I would probably say sequel. I enjoyed Black 2, White 2 a lot. Marketing, I think Black 2, White 2 still gives you a reason to buy Black and White. I feel like if you skipped Diamond and Pearl and you bought Platinum, boy, there's not a lot of reasons to go back to Diamond and Pearl unless you really want to see that loading bar.
I do not care about the profits of another company. I care about my enjoyment with the product.
I guess I would never tell somebody to buy Sun and Moon at this point, because I just think Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon is a better product.
Very true.
I still tell people to buy Sun and Moon because I think the story is more complex than Sun and Moon.
Yeah.
And playing both, like, I think to get more out of the story of Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, it's important to have played Sun and Moon so you can see the differences and see how what they're doing differs. Like, I think of all the ones that I've done, like, Sun and Moon has a much better story, and having played Sun and Moon made Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon's decisions make a little bit more sense. Like, Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon alone, the story is a lot weaker if you hadn't played Sun and Moon.
Oh, I don't disagree. I just think the amount of game you get in Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon is significantly...
You get a lot more game. That is true.
Just one thing that I mean, that kind of draws me to a sequel, and like I wish that they could expand on more, that I can't think of a lot of games that have done this, but they did for Black 2 and White 2, was they had that thing where you could transfer over some of your experiences, and then as you went through the story, it was like, remember when this previous trainer came through and did this, this, and this, and it was like memories of what things you had done. I was like, that was amazing. It's like so simple, such a little thing, such a little touch, but boy, oh boy, did it add so much meaning to those games.
I mean, if Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon had done that, I probably would be on to sequels more, but like they did it for Black and White 2 and then dropped it like a hot potato, which like it does. That's what doesn't sell me on sequels. Like even Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon weren't really sequels. They were
certainly weren't. Yeah.
No, they were just just platinum. They just figured out they could sell two copies instead of one.
Yeah. So like if they were actually to put out a true sequel, then I would probably be interested in that. To finish their comment, they would personally like a sequel. This time we were offered a Johto starter, only Syndical matters, as well as our Galarian one. Been listening since I was playing Heart Gold. It's crazy to think that I'm still here listening to you boyos. Anyways, happy 400 episodes.
Why is that? There's nothing crazy about that. We good. We're good to listen to. So this is a question from Grant. Hi, I've been listening to your podcast for a while. I'm on the younger side, yet I still find it really awesome and entertaining. I love your podcast so much. My question is, would you shiny unlock Zacian, Zamazenta, Eternatus, and starters, or keep them locked? Thanks. Have an awesome day. There were a lot of E's in awesome, but I'm sure I just couldn't pronounce them.
Awesome.
No, I would keep them locked.
I would keep them locked as well.
Yeah, I agree. What's nice about shiny locking those particular Pokemon in the games is that in the future they can then do a distribution and everybody can get them as shiny. And then your whole soft resetting drama and everything is just for nature.
Yeah.
And I mean, people hate getting... I don't know why. There's a group of people that hate getting free shinies. Although I would argue walking into GameStop is much more difficult than...
That is a stressful situation right there.
I think the deeper reason, I talk about Pokemon too much. I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast or this was specifically a Twitch stream thing, but I don't think it was any secret. I don't think it was an accident that in Sun and Moon, those starter resets were like 5 minutes each, right? I don't think like anyone at the Pokemon company or anyone at Game Freak making the games were like, oh, Joe, shouldn't we add a... There's no Japanese person named Joe. Shouldn't we add a reset?
Yes, there is.
Or a save right before the person picked up the starter? Like, the amount of ease they could have made that happen, and they chose not to. I think they're well aware. They've been well aware since Black and White, that people want to reset for these things, and they don't want those people to, probably because... My assumption is they want those people to play through the game and not worry about that. And if you have somebody, I can think of four people on Twitch that when Sword and Shield came out, they were still soft resetting for either Popplio, Litten, or Rowlet in one of their copies of Sun and Moon. And I just don't think that's a good way to experience a game. And I get it. You paid the $40. Experience the game and how you want to experience it. But if somebody's not getting to the end of Black and White because they're still trying to soft reset for Zekrom, like they might not ever see the ending to that game. So I think it was smart although controversial to lock these Pokemon. But at the same time, I don't, and I've always said this, I don't think turning on and off your video game over and over is a great way to play a video game.
Agreed.
I just think I like it because it did encourage everybody to get into the game pretty quickly. Like, I did do a little software setting for natures, not a lot, because I knew mints were coming on. I also know that natures don't really matter when you're playing through the game. They only really matter for competitive, truly. Like, you can get through the game by overleveling. So I think I like it because it encourages people to just start playing the game. Get into the content. Like, don't worry about this. Don't waste 50 hours before you actually get to play the game, especially when you had, you know, we're in the era of content creation for these games, and I'm sure they want people to be like, don't have your content be 50 hours of software setting when our game immediately comes out. Just please start playing the game.
Yeah, and I think there is, I don't know, even though the people complain that, like, oh, Zygarde, was it Zygarde? Yeah, it was Zygarde that was shiny locked, and then they gave it as a GameStop distribution for the year of Legendary. Whether or not it's shiny, I think, is pretty irrelevant because the distributions are a time and place kind of thing, and we've learned with Marshadow, and we've learned with Volcanion, and we've learned with Meloetta. If you
and
weren't
Zeraora.
And Zeraora, these Pokemon are incredibly rare now. And they should be, I mean, they should be rare, they're mythical, but they're rare because you had a full month, which is a long time, to walk into a GameStop and get these, and a lot of people didn't.
Mm-hmm.
The same for Zygarde. You had a month to get shiny Zygarde, and if you missed it, you missed it. Some people don't care. They wanted to sit there and turn off their video game over and over, and if that's how you enjoy a game, that's cool. I mean, I've done it. I've definitely turned off my Switch 7,000 times for shiny Articuno, and I can't say that at any point of that was fun, but I got a shiny Articuno at the end of it, and I put it into the box, and I don't think I've looked at it since, but mission accomplished, I guess. I think if anything, they have definitely leaned into shinies.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they have a good way for us to hunt like legendary shinies at this point. So by locking it, I guess they're at least letting people play the other parts of the game and not turn off and on their game. Yeah, I don't know what the future is for that. I don't know how they fix that or get people to say, like, okay, you can in this super ultimate Pokemon Sword in 15 years when we replay through it again, you'll be able to hunt Zacian, but it will be this way and not turn on and off your video game over and over. I don't know what that looks like, though. I'm not a video game. I don't have to be creative. I'm not a video game creator.
Not with that attitude.
Lewis from our Slack community asks, will there be another top 10 Pokemon debate episode in the future?
Ugh, my stomach can't handle it. I was so hungry at the end of that.
What was that, like a 5-hour recording that we ended up cutting down to like 3 hours?
It was supposed to be like 30 minutes, the little throwaway fun thing to do, and it was like 5 hours long, and I was so hungry.
You know, if I'd been there, it would have been even longer.
Yup.
So let's do another one. 80 hours!
Yeah, I mean, we could do another one. I don't know what that would entail. I think the problem is, like, there's so many Pokemon.
Right.
And it's so hard to, like, weigh the opinions. It would have to be, like, top 10 water Pokemon or something. Like, you would have to, like, cut it down dramatically. I feel like
top 10 water Pokemon that are fish only.
Okay. All right.
Goldeen.
Number one, Goldeen. Number two, Basculin.
Bruxish.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think there's an importance to have episodes that are not news focused, although obviously there's a lot of Pokemon news that comes out, so it's easy to keep doing a weekly show. But I think at a point in time that was a really good episode to point people towards if they were unsure of where to start.
Yeah.
But now I feel like that episode's very outdated.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
I still lived in D.C. Remember those days?
Finally.
What?
I was waiting for that.
Excuse me. Texas still has my card.
Greg, you want to take a question?
From Kevin, what has your favorite episode of ISE been? This is a toughie.
Yeah, it is. It's like they go completely out of my memory the minute I walk away from the microphone.
Like, as a listener, I mean, I will put up there, since we talked about the top 10 Pokemon debate, was a joy to listen to, even though I hated all of you for picking wrong. And you did pick wrong, so don't even try to defend your choices.
Oh, I still can't believe Steve and his whole, what was that Helix fossil fiasco?
Nightmare.
He so easily forgot. It was so important to him at that time, sure.
Mm-hmm. What? I didn't forget. I still stand by that argument.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Nightmare fuel, that one.
If anything, I'm still mad that Micah's Pokemon made the list so much. Because, like, no one challenged it. It was just like, I like Gengar because it was the ghost Pokemon I caught in Red and Blue. And everyone was like, oh, this is good enough.
I mean, who doesn't like Gengar?
Special Gengar right now. I think there's a lot of moments, like the WAP zip moment is still up there. I think that's very, very funny. It's hard to pick an episode because, like, a lot of the episodes that are news-focused is like, well, that was just the news that time. Contrary to popular belief, I've always liked listening to the live episodes that were recorded at the PAXes. I think those were all very fun. I know people don't like live episodes, but I always enjoyed them because I think the interactions with the fans and, like, the little kids asking questions were always charming.
Not a one particular episode, because there've just been too many. Just for me to say one. But I think when we did years ago the... Was it? Not Patreon, but the other one. The fundraiser.
Kickstarter?
The Kickstarter. And we had everybody, all the guests come on. And they were like, got to be on one episode,
We
talked to everybody. I really enjoyed those because we just had so many different people, different perspectives, and everything like that. That I enjoyed doing all of those. And then Greg and I got into a fight.
Yeah, we did, because you're wrong.
Well, whatever.
And we continue it to this day.
To this day. So yeah, I think those were probably among my favorites. I mean, I also, you know, started doing this with Justin, and I enjoyed like a lot of doing all of the episodes with him because Justin is always so excited about things in a way that I don't get excited ever. So that, I think I'll always hold that fond memories of that.
Rochelle goes, what's the best / most useful life lesson you've learned from your experiences with Pokemon? I've learned that people on Instagram are consistently wrong.
Ooh.
I don't know why it's specifically Instagram, but man. No, I have a serious answer. Will, you can go, though.
I was going to say that I remember like when we first met up at U.S. Nationals in 2012, and I didn't know anything about EV training or meta or anything for VGCs, but I had my team. And my life lesson was to just enjoy yourself, because even if you've got a bad team, you're there to have fun.
I don't know. This is tough. Best, most useful. I think in all of my years of dealing with Pokemon, not just this podcast, but in everything, I think one of the best things that Pokemon has been able to capture that doesn't exist in a lot of other fandoms is a very strong sense of community. The fact that there's a strong working together, trading, and a focus on sort of friendly competitive, that I think Pokemon more than anything introduces you to similar people who like things like you, that's mostly free from toxicity. Mostly. I mean, there's still some darker aspects. I think the whole Dexit thing brought out some very dark things. But I think in general, the community that Pokemon builds naturally through its gameplay is one of the best things that I've gotten out of Pokemon. I've made a lot of friends through the game. I've made a lot of connections through the game that just weren't there before. It's easy to bond over this. I think Pokemon Go really helped reinforce that. It's easy to bond over Pokemon Go as well. Like, you can talk about these things as a shared experience. And I would say more than a lot of other fandoms, I've made a lot of great connections through Pokemon as a game, as a fandom.
When I started the podcast, I was an idiot. And
not an idiot, just a neophyte.
And I've definitely grown over the years. It's funny because I found an old Trello board the other day, and it was probably around the time before Will was active on the podcast, I would say.
Yeah, I don't remember ever using Trello, so.
Yeah, and there was maybe like 20 people that was part of it, and it was a bunch of people that wanted to somehow help out with the show, whether that was writing or just helping with future episode concepts or whatnot. I don't even remember how it got started, but I just like read some of the the priorities I had, and they were just like wrong. They were just like creating content and like reading this was a priority for me at the time. It was just like, oh, this is why none of this was successful back in the day.
I mean, weren't you like 22?
Yeah. Would have been 20. I think I would have been 21 when I started, actually.
I mean, so more than the two of us, like, The years between 20 and 21 and 21 and 20, like, there's a lot of just growth that adults go through then. So I think, like, I also listened to the very beginning, and you are a very different person than when you started. But you're also, like everybody does, you had a lot of growth and, like, in your 20s. You were exposed to a lot more things. And I will say, to your credit, I know a lot of people who are exposed to a big wide world who constantly knocks you down, who become more obstinate and more awful, and you didn't do that. You have very much grown as a person and accepted everything that came your way and are willing to mostly accept when you're wrong.
Mostly.
And adapt to become a better person. I think over this time period, I think everybody can see that you have changed and improved yourself and improved your outlook, which does not happen to a lot of people. So if nothing else, like, it's easy to look back at our old selves and be like, I can't believe that's who I was.
Oh, that was 100% me.
A lot of people don't do that. A lot of people can look at their past self and say, well, I'm the same. And I think you should be proud of who you've become through a lot of stuff that the world has thrown at you and still produce a lot of things that people enjoy. And I think you should be proud of that.
Yeah. And I will say, right, that one thing, just over the almost 10 years now that this podcast has existed, is that, and you know, this is like one of the core things that I always hold for my own life, right? It's, you know, constant progress. Yeah, I'm never going to be perfect, but I'm constantly progressing, constantly improving. And if you really just look over the amount of time that the podcast has been coming out, it's just always progressing to become a better, more professional, you know, even trying new things. It's like, if the new things don't work out, you know, quietly retiring them, but just always moving towards a more professional and keeping eyes on constant improvement and making sure that the podcast as a product is something that people are continuing to enjoy and continues to have value for the community, where there's a lot of people, and even people who have been doing podcasts for a decade or more, where their podcast has literally not changed since day one.
Yep.
I think that that's just like a huge testament to the amount of work that, you know, that Steve puts in to, you know, keeping his ears to the ground, listening to what people want, listening to what people have to say, and listening to me and Greg too, and others, obviously, because there's been many other people involved over time, and saying, you know, like, you know, is this something we should try? Is this something we shouldn't try? Why should we? Why shouldn't we? Should we discuss these topics? In what way? How do we bring this up? Do we just not bring this up? And, you know, that's a level of professionalism that probably, and I will have to say, like, outweighs, like, the amount of professionalism that's put into the recording of this program outweighs the monetary that you get back as compared to other programs that are on the same professional level. Does that make any sense? Do those words in that order?
Mostly, sure.
Okay, thank you. I mean, there's no ads. There used to be ads. We did ads for socks at one point.
I remember those.
We did. We did do ads for socks at one point. I am sure there's probably a path where I could have made more clickbaity stuff even now on YouTube or whatnot and grow that audience quicker, but I would rather take the slow route and just continue to be genuine and provide the most accurate information. And we've gotten things wrong on the show before, but I still stand by, like, old me probably was trying to get numbers to grow quicker, and new me is too focused on the show being genuine. The next question will surprise you, though.
Oh, absolutely.
You won't believe the next question.
Well, we'll end on this question here. Brandon says, what is your favorite ISC memory that is not Pokemon related?
Gen Con 2016, when I actually decided to drive across states to finally meet everybody. Like, I had talked to you for, because we'd been doing Mythical, and I still hadn't met anybody in person. And I'd never done Gen Con, and I was traveling by myself, and I was going to go meet complete strangers. I'm like, this is such a bad idea. But at least I'm at a convention, so if I hate them, I can do other things. It was great. Like, it was a lot of fun. Like, I had a better time than I was expecting.
I would probably say, like, what comes to mind first is there was one time, and I don't even remember why I was visiting you. I may have been visiting you for your birthday, but I don't even remember if that was why. And Jeff Theed came, and we picked him up at the bus station.
Okay.
And then we, like, stayed up, like, completely overnight until, like, 6 o'clock the next morning playing board games.
I do remember
this. That was a lot of fun.
I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but there was was 2016 where I got in contact with a lot of people who have done something with the show. Greg, Will, Logan, Travis, and we rented a house in the Wisconsin Dells.
Mm-hmm.
I was there.
You were there, and I think there was like 13 of us, 14 of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the Wisconsin Dells are in the middle of Wisconsin. They're like an hour north of Madison. Madison is like an hour west of Milwaukee. It's like maybe 3 hours east of the Twin Cities.
Three and a half.
And
I've done that drive a lot.
There's different hotel accommodations at the Wisconsin Dells, and we ended up going to the Kalahari, and they had, this would have been December, early December, I think.
First week of December.
Yeah, because Sun and Moon were out. They were out for almost a month, and we rented a whole house, and it had, I think, 5 or 6 bedrooms.
There was one in the basement. There was 2 on the main floor, and then 2 on the top floor, maybe?
I think
there were 3 in the top floor.
And each bedroom had like 2 beds, and Travis flew in and Logan flew in, and then there was like and Will flew in, so there was like four cars that left Milwaukee with different people in it and different luggage, and I think two cars left Minnesota.
Yep.
And then we...
It could have easily been one, but I didn't know those people very well true, at that time.
And there was the, like, 13, 14 of us that we were at the cabin for, like, 3 or 4 days, and it was fantastic. It was, like, it was because of ISC, but it had nothing to do with the podcast and stuff. And I do think we recorded some Mythical there.
We did.
If we were to ever do it again, which I don't know if that would ever be possible, just having all those people...
2 a.m. playing Jackbox, 2 a.m. playing TKO, which I did my best shirt is from that.
Oh,
TKO.
No, the TKO shirts from
those
that
shirts,
are amazing.
That, I mean, I still can't believe it was up at 2 a.m., but...
But I think like 14 people renting the cabin came to like, it was like $50 a night for a person. It was like incredibly cheap,
bad.
And everyone walked out spending like less than $200. And it's always why now, like, it's so hard for me to put Gen Con on the list of things I want to do, because Gen Con is like minimum $1,000.
Your numbers are way wild for that.
What?
But anyways.
No, it's not. Hotels are like minimum $199.
Yeah, no, the hotel is super expensive.
Yeah, but you don't share.
Well, that's true. He does not share.
So,
correct.
Like... Of the conventions I went to last year, some with you, Gen Con was my cheapest.
PAX is significantly expensive.
It's wild.
Yeah, PAX is real expensive. But yeah, I would love to do something like that again with more people. I remember being very, very worried about the initial the dynamics of having all those people in the house, but also like the price of the credit card to rent a house for 3 days. Although when you break it down into like 14 different people, it comes out to pennies, but somebody has to pay that cost up front. But yeah, that was a really good weekend. And I remember it was a lot of people playing board games or playing games on the TV or just sitting around playing Sun and Moon. And there was a complete indoor water park and amusement park and tons of restaurants, and it was a super good weekend.
Yeah, I remember the mac and cheese restaurant.
The restaurant
that
was
one
good.
And the hamburger restaurant where we went back to for Heatran.
No, Heatran was bachelor party.
That's what I'm saying. We went back
we
to
went
it.
Back
oh,
then.
I see, yeah. I see, I see.
And y'all forced us to go to Pizza Ranch, which is unstill. To this day, unforgivable.
Look, you do Pizza Ranch once, and then you just never have to go back again.
Yeah, you get Pizza
you
Ranch
have,
out of the way.
You didn't have to go the first time.
The only problem with Wisconsin Dells
is
there's like no way to go directly to the Dells.
Correct.
There's no like airport there. But if you want a cheap trip, the first week of December, Wisconsin Dells.
Off-season Wisconsin Dells.
December, January
so.
At the Dells?
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Just not Christmas. Christmas at the Dells is expensive.
That's our episode. That's episode 400.
Woo!
Are you telling me I wrote a Pokemon of the Week for no reason?
You did.
You gotta save it.
Ugh.
I did my song up front.
Sorry if we did not get to your question. There was a lot, so thank you guys for asking your questions on whatever platform you've answered. If you want to follow us on Twitter, Will is at Washing the Sink, Greg is at White Wing, I'm at Dragging a Lake, the podcast is PKMNcast, Twitch and YouTube the same, and Instagram the same, PKMNCAST. The podcast goes up on YouTube and goes up on all the podcast feeds on Mondays, and then two YouTube videos on Wednesday and Friday, and then streams pretty much all week, and probably an Instagram post every single day. Probably is keyword. Usually it's like 6 days a week. I usually just skip one
day. And you started doing Facebook stories.
Yeah, I don't. Well, Instagram auto posted that, but Instagram stories, I guess. Whatever that is. But thank you for listening. I know there's been way more than 400 episodes of this show. It's just not all of them were
numbered
properly. But thank you. We'll be back next week with a normal episode. I don't think there was terribly a lot of news this week, so I don't think anything super dramatic happened that we don't have to rush to cover, that we can still cover next week. So thank you for listening. Wash your hands. We will be back next week. This has been another episode of the Pokemon Podcast, and we are...
super effective.
Super celebrate good times. Come on.
We're out of the 80s.
Celebration.
Is that 70s or
70s? 80s? That's
all right. Heck
so
yeah.
70s.
Take me back to the roller rink, buddy.
Yeah.
This podcast is supported by our Patreon backers, and some of those people paid money to get their name read at the end of this show. A huge thank you to Alex, Courtney, Jetsy, Casey, Catherine, Kay, Kevin, Liam, Matthew, Noah, Patrick, Raitan, and Sejanus. And a shout out to our executive producer of Anthony. Thank you guys so much for your support. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to support the podcast as well, you can go over to patreon.com/itssupereffective, or you can head over to the easier to remember domain, ise.cash. Super easy to remember because money exchanges hands, and ISC is short for the podcast. Also, shout out to Nick, who does all the music for the show. And yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for making it to the end. This was new. Hey, it was different. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much for supporting the show and listening. Really, really, truly appreciate it. We'll see you next week. Bye.